Amid extraordinary security in Sarajevo, according to the Wall Street Journal, President Clinton is going to propose ending tariffs on many imports from the region and will press the EU to do the same. We're going to talk a little bit about that and more about the Balkans and some other things as we're joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of the internet email in Pakistan, and of course, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George. How are you?
Well, I am fine. First of all, what exactly are they up to at this Balkan summit?
Well, basically, George, the idea is now that the war, or at least the bombing campaign, is over and peace and normalcy seem to be returning. The root cause of the problem has not gone away. Milosevic is still in power, and hence things could flare up still, much like they do in Iraq on a regular basis. But there is still an effort underway to rebuild the region, basically now try to help the people who were impacted not just by Mr. Milosevic's actions and the Serbs' actions, but also by the bombing campaign itself.
Now, as I understand it, President Clinton will be offering to cut tariffs on certain exports from that area, or imported into the U.S. He will not, and that would be for, though, Kosovo and, I think, Montenegro, but not for Serbia.
Absolutely. George, actually, the approach they are taking is twofold, with the third angle that relates to Mr. Milosevic himself. The idea is basically that, yes, there is a need to rebuild the region. Of course, long-term security and stability can only come if there is economic well-being and an opportunity for people to live well. And towards that end, one of the approaches is to actually make funds available either through direct monetary aid that enables them to rebuild the region, or through credits and other such financial incentives. And secondly, to actually help them find markets for whatever products they make. For example, shoes are a major export from that region. So things like that would be allowed into the U.S., for example, duty-free for up to 5 years. And these kinds of incentives and aid packages are intended primarily for about 7 or 8 countries in the region, including Bosnia, etc., but not including Serbia until Mr. Milosevic is in power, and that was the third angle I mentioned.
And while we're talking about that, as this summit gets underway, they're saying that, for example, and I guess there's no big surprise here that Secretary of State Madeleine Albright touring the region was cheered by Albanians and booed by Serbs. So I guess there's no surprise here. The question is, what is the status of Mr. Milosevic? I know there have been all kinds of reports, some of them conflicting, but to the effect that even his supporters are not that happy with him right now, and there's a lot of undertow there to try to get rid of him. Some don't like him because they don't like him and they don't like what he's been up to, and others, even who might have supported his efforts, don't like him because they think he caved in.
Very good point, George.
I guess the question, though, is how much is there to the notion that maybe he is seeing his support base erode and that he is vulnerable to being removed from power?
I'd say, think of him as another Saddam Hussein, only a little worse, if that is possible. The fact of the matter is that, yes, he also has an iron fist, and it may not appear to be as unilateral as Saddam Hussein's may appear to be in Iraq, but again, this man has been responsible for the brutal murders of millions of people, and the same way, people who are close to him are pretty strong, pretty well-armed, and also carry that same message of hate. So he's doing nothing. He's not making them do anything. He is merely an outlet for their anger and their hate that they carry themselves. The New York Times recently had done an article on this, I believe, a few weeks ago, where one of the writers had actually gone and spoken to Serbs, and they were showing off the stuff they had looted and the people they had killed to get like 3 televisions in one house and 2 air conditioners, and they were very proud of it and were looking forward to the opportunity to do that again. So whether Milosevic is in power or not, that level of hate will still remain. People like that will always keep him or people like him in power. At the same time, he is that voice and that face that they need. So even if people resent the economic implications or the short-term pain, hate doesn't go away just because you are economically crippled for a while.
No, but sometimes these kinds of dictators have the ability to consolidate power absolutely under the worst circumstances, and we saw that with Saddam Hussein. And sometimes but it's always precarious, and sometimes it gets away from them, their power base. And even though we tend to perceive them as individuals who control everything by just pulling a string or threatening, there are intricate alliances often that keep them in power. And it seems to me we've heard some outspoken, more so than you would have heard from Saddam Hussein, some outspoken criticism of Mr. Milosevic, even from the right-wing base that he had going into the invasion of Kosovo.
Absolutely, and that may appear as good news, but it's almost a good news with a bad news angle to it. The fact is that one of the strongest alliances Mr. Milosevic has is sympathy from the Soviet Union, from Russia, I should say. And similarly, the very right wing that is now making the sounds for the West to hear, or I should say for the United States and the Allies to hear, is that they don't like him, they'd like to get rid of him. But as you said, these are the very people who brought him and kept him in power. So yes, he could be replaced, but it could be replacing by somebody with a different face, but the same attitude and the same basic intentions.
I know that at, you know, of course, the recent tragedy where they had discovered the massacre of 14 Serbian farmers and so on, they had a mass. The deputy foreign minister of Yugoslavia was there and called it a horrifying crime and said those who are responsible must be caught. And I think, now I don't know what he was implying. I don't know if he was saying there might be somebody else other than Mr. Milosevic, or is that a veiled barb at Mr. Milosevic?
It's actually it's a very well-placed statement. Basically, it can be construed in any way that you would like to think of it as.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, as being an indirect message for Mr. Milosevic, it's also a message to the previous victims. It's almost like this crime that happened is bigger than worse stuff that had happened before that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost like you know, the media can sometimes love the bad news stories because they help sell more. But in the same way, something like this happens, it gives the hate mongers, as well as people looking for their own personal political angle, to give them an opportunity to make statements, which, even though they may not make perfect sense or may actually relate to two or three different things, can give them the perception of getting the visibility in the media and being, you know, powerful statement makers or opinion formers or leaders of the future.
Well, now let's look at the little bit bigger picture right now. They're having this summit. They're trying to do what they can to help revitalize the area. The war, the fighting is over for the moment, at least. UN troops in there, kind of monitoring things and so on. Where are we then in terms of making some transition to an area of that is at least I hate to use the word stable, but maybe has a fragile stability to it.
Well, basically, George, there will be two levels of change that will be required. The first level, of course, is at the local level. That basically requires either through education, through some time being spent by third parties such as the UN peacekeepers, or the NATO peacekeepers, I should say, and allowing economic development to take place so people actually can focus more on making money and rebuilding lives and rebuilding the region, and sort of letting hate sort of drift away. Now, that cannot succeed in itself unless the big powers, the powers like Russia, do not see the importance of making sure that they do not give the wrong signals. Yes, the Russians would like to ensure that they are recognized and respected for their, you know, their power and their influence on the global stage. But at the same time, if they're doing that, they're trying to prove their value as an international or global player by making an issue or taking a stand on what is really the wrong issue, and that would be to support the Serbs in a wrong battle or a wrong war or letting them get away with murder, so to speak. The downside to that is that people who may otherwise have been open to force and the carrot and stick approach to change their ways see hope in this other big savior who's on their side and basically validating whatever wrongs they have done. And that can be a hot and cold thing, and I don't think the desired results can be achieved then.
Is it possible, though, that the Russians are not that thrilled with Mr. Milosevic, but of course are always suspicious of and probably jealous of at this point the West, and they are fighting to maintain a certain status and stature in the world? It would not, in other words, if internally Mr. Milosevic was removed and somebody more acceptable to the global community was in power, and at the same time the Serb population could say, yes, the Russians were backing us and letting us take care of our own situation. It seems to me that that's kind of where the Russians would be coming from. I don't know what they're willing to do to support Mr. Milosevic, but it seems to me, if anything, he's a bit of an embarrassment to them. They wouldn't mind seeing him go.
Absolutely. Now, in a way, he might be an embarrassment today, or let's say he may be expendable today.
Yeah.
But in the bigger scheme of things, he was actually a great thing that happened as far as the Russians are concerned. One, he caused a major crisis.
Right.
He caused a battle where the West was the bad guys bombing civilians as far as they could perceive or portray, as far as the Russians portray that image. Then the Russians were able to, even when they were not actively involved in either the negotiations or the peacekeeping or whatever, were able to do that hand-wringing, we are with you, we feel your pain, with the Serbian people.
Right.
So they still came out looking good. And then, at the end, they were able to step in and say, we are the ones helping make the peace deal. So again, this actually helped them along. And then, with the actual peace at hand, they were able to have their tanks roll in and look like they were the big saviors of the day. So it's been the best thing that could have happened for them from the pure marketing perspective.
Right, but I guess as there are more revelations and the international community becomes more and more aware of Mr. Milosevic, it's going to be a tough sell to a lot. In other words, I think the Russians' position would be, we're here for the Serbian people, not for Mr. Milosevic.
Absolutely, yeah. And so then he will become expendable, and I think he realizes that, but right now he has enough of this militia power available to him to be a nuisance and not be able to go away quietly.
What about what we are doing? We are helping, and of course it's modest, but we are cutting to zero, I guess, tariffs on certain of their exports, as we said. And at the same time, we are not, that for the Montenegro and Kosovo and some areas there, but not for the Serbs. What kind of pressure, or how much help is that, for one thing, for the region, and what kind of pressure, if any, economically, does that put on Serbia?
That's a good question, George. Now, the amount is very significant or totally insignificant, and allow me to explain. The amount that's in question, the amount that's being used for this rebuilding effort is $700 million. Now, interestingly, $700 million is a lot of money. But with the way things are on the stock market here and with internet companies changing values by about $1 billion in one day, it really means it's nothing as far as the world sees in terms of what impact it can have on the local market when you try to solve a global problem for 7 or 8 countries. $700 million in itself is not cash being spent on the market. What is basically intended is about $150 million is going to be given to finance new large companies, for example.
Right.
$200 million is going to be given as credit lines available, for example, to banks, etc., to be able to make available to local companies. Only about $34 million or $35 million is going to small business generation, which really is what these countries will need. These are small countries with relatively small economies and with significant populations that do not need one giant Bosnian corporation, for example, or something.
Right, right.
They need small business. There's only about $30 million or $35 million earmarked for that. And again, when we're talking $35 million, the actual money that will end up in people's homes or hands or shops is going to be much lower than that. So it's not really enough, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, so that's not enough. What about what we're doing to isolate Serbia? And we're not obviously not cutting it and putting some pressure on the Serbian economy.
Right, so we're making the sound that, well, there's nothing for you if you don't behave yourself, but guess what? There's nothing for anybody. So the Serbs really don't have an incentive. I'm not saying we should be spending $20 billion there, but if you're talking real money and some real numbers here, there would be a greater incentive. If I am one of the 8 countries in the region and I suddenly see new highways, new roads, new airports, new aeroplanes coming into my neighboring country, and meantime nothing is happening for me, I will feel the pain, I will feel the jealousy, and I will feel the need to remove whoever is responsible for them, whether it's Milosevic or anybody else. However, if I see a mere 5% increase in the standard of living of the guy next door, I am not going to give up my ways of hate and my anger and my belief in Mr. Milosevic or whoever, or Adolf Hitler if it was him. That, the same thing would not have made a difference.
Let me ask this then. Given that, one other question keeps coming up, and that is, are we going to be looking at instability in Montenegro next, and some flare-up there of separatist movements, or in other words, some other kind of instability? Is that the next area of concern, particularly in light of what you're saying?
Yes, indeed. As a matter of fact, it is, because when you hear about American aid, for example, even if it's not the U.S. aid in particular, but when you hear about aid from abroad coming in to, like, change things and rebuild the nation, etc., etc., people still tend to look at it in terms of how Germany was rebuilt anytime somebody is expecting aid or is getting aid. And believe me, this money will not do anything like that, unfortunately.
And Montenegro is just, right on the Adriatic, a little bit in the southwestern corner of Serbia.
I believe so.
Yeah, and so just above the Kosovo and just under Bosnia. So, you know, and it has been the last, republic, I guess, or state of Yugoslavia that has kind of hung with Serbia, but there are tensions there as well.
Exactly. Now, because one of the things is that even locally, when this money gets dispersed, even in the areas where it is going, the standard of living will not be noticed by the masses. However, the money, there will always be scandals, there will always be corruption. Some of this money will be lost and squandered and stolen. So you will see some people get rich, whereas the rest of the country does not really see the benefit. So even within the country is getting the aid, small amounts like this are more likely to create dissent and anger and resentment, and maybe even an increasing difference between the haves and the have-nots. So, yes, you can actually sow the seeds of further problems 5 or 10 years down the road when you were really intending to do something totally different.
Well, of course, they're holding this conference, as we said, Balkan Summit, and we'll see where that goes. I know that Mr. Clinton, President Clinton, has some work cut out for him just to get the EU to go along with some of these tariff cuts, not to mention some of the other things that you've been talking about. So when we get some word on where that has taken them, this summit, you and I will get a chance to talk again, Imran. We're all out of time for today. Thank you much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure, and let's hope for a good, positive rebuilding effort there.
I'm with you on that one. Thank you, sir. Imran Anwar, founder of Imran Net Services in New York, pioneer of the Internet email in Pakistan, and a well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia.